You are new here. Really glad you're here. If we don't have your information, you want to give it to us. There are sign-up sheets in the back there, and you can do that later on. But if we already have it, we'll get in touch with you some way. But John 20. So what are we doing? We are doing a series this semester called Doubts and Defeaters, Big Questions for a Big God. And the purpose of that is to actually pose very big, very difficult questions and then try to see if the Bible provides some answers to it. Because everybody has these questions. So some of the questions we'll go through this semester are, is the Bible reliable? Can God be good when there's so much evil and suffering in the world? Is there really only one way to God? Are science and Christianity friends or foes? Can a wrathful God be loving? Or can a loving God be wrathful? Go both ways. Doesn't Christianity just divide people? So those are just some of the questions we'll deal with each Wednesday and try to provide some answers to it. Tonight, we're going through this one. Did Jesus really rise from the dead? Did that actually happen? This is a core belief in Christianity, core tenet. In fact, Paul goes so far to say that everything hangs on this, that me being an outspoken Christian, that I am to be pitied above all else on the earth if this didn't happen. So it's a big deal. It's a big question. My dad is currently someone who believes in God. He's not quite a Christian, but he used to be an agnostic, and he didn't know. He didn't know and he didn't care would kind of be the best idea to, or the best way to describe my dad. And years ago, when we lived in Nashville, we were sitting together eating dinner at a place called Ten Angel, which is really good if you ever go to Nashville. Go to Ten Angel. And we're talking, and what he tells me, he says, look, I'm good with the whole God thing. What I can't get on board with right now is the whole Jesus thing. And what did he mean? He meant was, I'm good at this point on believing that there's a God. I'm not so good right now believing that Jesus was who he said he was and that he did all the things that his followers said he did. Like, I can't get on board with that yet. And resurrection was part of it for him. Like, I just don't know if I can believe that Jesus did this. And why? I mean, that's a good thing to struggle with, because you and I both, or all of us, no, not both know, but we know that dead people typically stay dead. That's a scientific fact, right? Furthermore, I don't know, I'm not going to do a show of hands, but I doubt anyone in this room has seen somebody die and come back from the dead. Now I'm talking like died for days, you know, maybe the heart stopped or whatever, they came back. But again, we haven't seen it. So like, why do we think this is true? Did he really rise from the dead? That's the question. So I'll begin before reading the passage. I just want to say there's two quick objections that people might have before we even get to looking at any of this. And I just want to name them. One, the objection is miracles just don't happen. They just can't happen. So that's the objection initially. What I would say is that's actually an unhelpful place to start at, because if you actually want to look to see if something is true, it's not actually a great way, either historically or even scientifically, to already decide that it's not true before you've even given it a shot. It's sort of like saying, yeah, we know those kind of things don't happen, therefore they don't happen. See, it's not like an argument. It's an opinion, but it's not an argument, right? It would be like me shutting my eyes and saying, yeah, prove to me what, you know, show me what you were just saying, you know, say, you know, prove to me that it's true visually, or shutting my ears and saying, yeah, can you argue that for me? It's like, I've already decided not to listen, or I've already decided not to see. And what I would say is that if this God exists, then yes, miracles are possible. They're very possible, because God can edit, alter, add anything he wants, whenever he wants, just like a author of a book can edit, alter, add whatever they want to the story that they're writing. So I would just suggest, if that's difficult for you, if you think, yeah, miracles just aren't possible, I would put it on a shelf to actually be able to see first. And then you can decide, yeah, maybe they're not. That's the first objection. The second objection, before we even look at anything, is only irrational people believe in miracles. So only the irrational people actually would think this is possible. Here's the problem with that, though. Right now, the current estimate, it's actually a little higher than this, but the current estimate, there's about 2.3 billion people on the planet are Christians. Okay? That's a third of the planet. It's a third of the earth. They all believe miracles can happen. And that's not including other people who aren't Christian, but who still believe that the supernatural happens. So the majority of the world actually thinks that this is very possible and something that can happen. So we have to be careful, because you would be writing off the majority of the planet in this and saying, yeah, everybody is delusional or crazy. Or I'm rattling off a list of different people. There are countless normal, rational, and intelligent people who are Christians who believe in miracles. John Lennox is a world-renowned Oxford mathematician, Christian. Francis Collins is the head of the Human Genome Project. They were the first group of scientists to map the human genetic code, which is a pretty big deal, Christian. Alvin Plantinga is one of the world's best living philosophers, Christian. J.K. Rowling, author of Harry Potter, that's actually the best-selling series in history, which, I mean, I guessed that, but then I actually had to look it up, and it's true. It is. Christian, claims to be a Christian. Denzel Washington, Bono, Chris Pratt, all claim to be Christians. I just wanted to throw in some celebrities. All the Ivy League universities except for one in America were started by Christians.
Which one was it?
I think it's Yale, but check it. Fact check it for me. The point is, you can't say that irrational people only believe this, because plenty of normal, rational, intelligent people believe the miracles are possible. So I would just encourage, have an open mind, and we'll look at it, and we'll go from there. So John 20, starting in verse 24, go to verse 29, really short passage. Now Thomas, one of the 12, called the twin, was not with them when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, "We've seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see in his hands the mark of the nails and place my finger into the mark of the nails, and place my hand into his side, I will never believe." 8 days later, his disciples were inside again, and Thomas was with them. Although the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here. See my hands. Put out your hand and place it in my side. Do not disbelieve, but believe." Thomas answered him, "My Lord and my God." Jesus said to him, "Have you believed because you've seen me? Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." Okay, so what's happening? Right before this passage, right before this event, Thomas was not with the other disciples. He's one of Jesus' core group of followers. He's varsity. And he was not there. He was not present. And his friends that he has done ministry with for 3 years at this point have told him, "We know Jesus died because we saw that happen, but he's somehow come back." And he doesn't believe it. He doesn't believe it at all. He thinks it's ridiculous. He says in verse 25, so they say, "We've seen the Lord," verse 25. He says, "Unless I see in his hands the mark of the nails, place my finger in the mark of the nails, and place my hand in his side," like he wants a lot of evidence here, "I will never believe." In Greek, which is what this is originally written in, what's happening here when he says, "I will never believe," is the strongest way in the Greek language to say no. He's saying, "I absolutely never will believe this." Like, strongest doubt you can have. And where he has landed at this. What I want to say about that just initially would be, this just shows that ancient people aren't idiots. C.S. Lewis came up with an interesting phrase called chronological snobbery. And it's that we, modern people, look back, chronology, we look back at ancient people, we look down on them, because we think, oh yeah, like they were just, they're so gullible, they're pre-scientific, like poor pitiful people, they thought dead people got up all the time and walked around, like, but we know now that's just not true. That's just not the case. I mean, even here throughout this text, and there's actually other places throughout the Gospels, there's plenty of people that don't believe that this is happening. They don't believe this is true because they know, just like you and me, the dead people typically don't get up again. Thomas is one of them. He's an ancient person, but he's no idiot. He's not dumb. They knew this, just like you and me. He wants real reason. So verse 26 says, 8 days later, a week has gone by, and they're inside, and Jesus steps in. Now, the quick note on this, it says that the doors are locked and he steps inside. Some people suggest, and it's okay if this is you, but some people suggest that Jesus has passed through the walls of this room. If you read it in verse 26, it actually just says the doors are locked and Jesus comes to be with them. You know, he steps in with them. Never says that he passes through the walls, never says how he gets in. The likeliest thing that's going on here is the doors are locked, they become unlocked, he walks in. So I just want to say that there's just nothing here, because actually if you look at verse 19, which we didn't read, John mentions that the doors are locked and he gives the reason why, because they're afraid of the Jewish leaders who have just killed their friend. They've just killed Jesus. So they lock the door. So it's just reiterating the fact they're scared. The doors are still locked. And Jesus does come to be with them. He says, "Peace be with you." And then he gives Thomas all the evidence that he would want, all the evidence that he would need. He says, "Touch my hand, touch my side. It's me. I'm physical. I'm here." And Thomas believes. He says, "My Lord and my God." Verse 28. Right there, I mean, he's just simply saying, "Yeah, you are who you said you were. You claim to be God. I believe that now. You're him." But did he? Did he really, truly, historically, on this very planet, die and get up? Okay, so maybe he didn't. Maybe he didn't. What are some reasons that we would look at a passage like this, or any other, and we would say that, yeah, it just didn't happen? Theory number one. Some people say Jesus never died. So I just want to say that's historically false. every bit of historical evidence we have, that's Greco-Roman documents, so outside of the Bible, biblical documents, and even Jewish documents, every single document we have say that Jesus of Nazareth was executed successfully by the Romans. So he died. Actually, no reputable historian to this day, atheistic, Christian, non-Christian, otherwise, doesn't matter, no reputable one actually says that Jesus didn't die. Everyone agrees he died. So that just doesn't work. Another theory, what could have happened? Maybe somebody moved his body. So maybe people stole it, maybe people moved it. Stealing implies something like malevolent. So let's just say someone moved it. Someone moved the body. One, the Romans wouldn't do that. The Romans wouldn't do that because they were the ones that actually wanted him dead. His movement was picking up so much steam that it actually was detracting from Caesar worship. So they actually would want to keep him dead. There would be no reason to act like he was somehow alive again. The Jewish leaders would have wanted the same thing. They wanted him dead, not because they cared about Caesar worship, but because they actually cared about their power and their ability to be the high priest in the area. So they did not want Jesus alive. They're the ones that actually got the Romans to kill him in the first place. They want him dead too. Now, the disciples, maybe. Maybe they did. Maybe they did move Jesus' body. But here's the problem. The disciples, because they proclaimed that Jesus did rise from the dead, that he was alive, that actually led to them being socially ostracized, them losing money, losing clout, getting abused, being put in prison, and every single one of them but one were executed. Thomas actually was executed in India when he actually brought the gospel there, so the one we're reading about. It would have been very easy for them to clear this misunderstanding up and say, "Look, we lied. I don't want to die for this. I don't want to lose things for this. There's no reason." So they had nothing to gain by moving Jesus's body. It's not like they gained power for doing so. They lost it. Another theory is that they so strongly wanted it to be true that they just kind of like believed that it happened. They just collectively kind of wishful thinking that he's maybe spiritually with us or whatever else. Interestingly, what we know, and you actually look at documents and stuff like this from the ancient world, is that nobody in this time, in this place, actually believed that a resurrection like this was possible. What do I mean by that? The Jews didn't think that a resurrection was going to happen with one person in the middle of history before everybody else. They did think that a resurrection was going to happen, but it would be everybody, and it would be at the end of history. So nobody, no Jewish person, which is what Jesus was, Thomas was, these people, believed that a resurrection like this was going to happen. Now, if you were a Greco-Roman person, you, one, did not think that resurrection was possible, nor would you even want it to be, because they actually believed that the body was bad. They believed that there's a part to you called the soul, and that's your true self, and the body is like this cage that prevents you from being who you really are. So they actually wouldn't even want it in the first place. They didn't believe it. So to actually, simply put, to really want something to be true that no one believed that could actually happen, nor actually wanted it to happen, just doesn't really make much sense. They weren't like wishfully imagining that he was alive. And you see here again, Thomas, he's not wishfully thinking that he's alive. He actually is emphatically against it in the beginning. Fourth reason, last reason, maybe it didn't happen. This is probably the biggest one. They had mass hallucinations. It's different than the previous one. This one says that they just all had the same vision somehow at the same time of him being alive. So medically speaking, we know this isn't true. Psychologically and medically, mass hallucinations don't happen. One, hallucinations happen on an individual basis. They only happen with individuals. They don't happen in groups. Now, there are some people in history that have claimed to have mass visions of things. But historically and scientifically, when people actually look at it, the accounts that are given of those events, they vary too much person to person. So they're actually not even considered in the literature as mass hallucinations. They're considered like different types of visions. But they don't agree enough to be this same one. It'd be like y'all all having a mass hallucination of me right now. It has to agree. It to agree on what I'm wearing. It to agree on how I speak. It to agree on what I look like, what I do, right? And what I didn't do. Any example we have claiming to be that, it doesn't fit. In the biblical account, the accounts of Jesus' resurrection, they just don't fit that at all. They don't fit the data. It's different individuals, different groups of people at different times and different places, all claiming to have seen, heard, touched, and even engaged with, walked with, ate with Jesus after he had died. This is not a mass hallucination. So, those are the reasons why maybe he didn't. What are some reasons why maybe he did actually rise from the dead? What we know is that the biblical documents that we have are actually too early. They're too old. They're too close. They were written too close to the time these events happened to be legendary. This is fascinating. If you went to John Ryland's library right now in Manchester, England, you could get a portion of the Gospel of John, a physical copy of it. You can look at it with your eyes. It's from 30 years after the original. That's unheard of with ancient documents. There actually is no corollary to this. There's nothing like it. You can get a physical copy. You can look at it. That's 30 years after the original, which is crazy. Paul's letters were written 15 to 20 years after the events of Jesus. And what we're talking about is, historically speaking, there's just not enough time in order for legendary material to override what, quote unquote, really happened. There's just not enough time for that to occur. The sightings of Jesus, again, they're too numerous, they're too public to be ignored. Earlier, we read from 1 Corinthians. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15, verse 6, that Jesus appeared to more than 500 brothers at one time, most of whom are still alive, though some have fallen asleep. It's their way of saying some have died. There were too many examples in the gospel accounts, and you can look at different ones. I can even give you a list of all of them. And Jesus appears to too many people in too many different places for a long period of time to be able to say, yeah, this didn't happen. There's a biblical scholar, an expert named Peter Williams. He summarizes it this way. This is really good. He says, the resurrected Jesus is recorded as appearing in Judea and in Galilee, in town and in countryside, indoors and outdoors, in the morning and in the evening, by prior appointment and without prior appointment, close and distant, on a hill and by a lake, to groups of men and groups of women, to individuals and groups of up to 500, sitting, standing, walking, eating, and always talking. Many are explicitly close-up encounters involving conversations. It's hard to imagine this pattern of appearances in the Gospels and early Christian letters without there having been multiple individuals who at least claimed to have seen Jesus risen from the dead. And he gives citations of every single one of those that I just said. That's great. It's just, it's too public, too many times of these appearances that are claimed to be false. The evidence to a first century person would have been too embarrassing to have been made up. So it would have been too embarrassing to be made up. What do I mean by that? So in all the gospel accounts, what we didn't read, if you actually read the beginning of John 20, every gospel account says that women were the first eyewitnesses to Jesus' resurrection. Now, what's interesting about that is that women in this time, their eyewitness testimony was not seen as credible. It wasn't seen as credible in court. It wasn't seen as credible at all. Josephus, a great name, first century historian, he says, "But let not the testimony of women be admitted on account of the levity and boldness of their sex." So he looks down on women and their testimony. But this was a common view in this day. This is Jewish. Now let's look at the Greco-Roman side. This is also a first century Greek historian. His name is Strabo. "The great mass of women and common people cannot be induced by mere force of reason to devote themselves to piety, virtue, and honesty. Superstition must therefore be employed." Meaning, you can't trust them. You can't trust women and then common people, whoever they are, because he's not common. You know, he's a historian. What's the point? The point is this. If you are making this up, if you're making up this religion, if you're making up the fact that Jesus rose from the dead and you're in the first century, what you would not do is put women as the eyewitnesses claiming that Jesus rose from the dead. What you would do is put prominent men, possibly maybe the male disciples, maybe Thomas. You just wouldn't do it this way because it would get you nowhere. But maybe the only alternative we have is that women actually did. They were the first ones to claim that Jesus rose from the dead, and the gospel writers chose not to edit that information out, even though it wasn't very popular, even though it wasn't good. So it's too embarrassing to have been fabricated. They wouldn't have made it up. The other thing is that the gospels state over and over and over again, especially in this passage with Thomas, that people doubted it. Like, this is a core follower of Jesus. Like, he's an insider. He was with him for 3 years. He walked around in his ministry. Like, he knows him super well, and yet he's doubting that he's risen from the dead. Like, that's, it's just in there, in the document. It's just not even given in any sort of explanation more than that. Nothing to gain by putting that there. Now, the last reason to kind of add weight to this would be that the belief in Jesus' resurrection was too unpopular and too costly to believe that it was all made up. Too unpopular, too costly. So what I mean, the first Christians start worshiping a man as God overnight. And that's a pretty big shift. Now, what's fascinating is that for Jews, that actually was blasphemy, meaning the death penalty is supposed to happen for somebody to worship anyone or anything other than God as God. So the Jews actually deserve the death penalty for worshiping Jesus as God. The Greeks are the same way. Not because they believe in one God, but because if you're not worshiping Caesar, then you're treasonous. It's sedition. So they should be put to death as well. But what you have in the first century is hordes of Jews and Greeks initially worshiping Jesus as God. They're willing to risk their lives for this. And like I said earlier, they lost social status, economic status. They're in prison. They're systematically oppressed by both governments, Jewish and Roman. They're beaten, tortured, and put to death. It's possible that all these people, all these early Christians, especially the disciples, that they either died for something they knew wasn't true, or that they died for something they just weren't sure was true. It makes a whole lot more sense, though, that they were certain about something happening. They were certain that Jesus rose from the dead in order for them to risk this much. That actually makes more sense. The whole point of all this is this. If you claim that Jesus, you know, came back to life, if you think that that's improbable and downright difficult to believe, what's more improbable and more difficult to believe is that they had no good reason to give up their lives believing it, stating it, saying it. They had no evidence for it. It actually is more probable, improbable, and more difficult to say that he stayed dead. It just doesn't fit the evidence. It doesn't fit any of this stuff. So what does all this matter? What does it matter for us? Years ago, I'll back up. I found out I had really bad allergy issues. And they were pretty debilitating. I didn't know what they were. Went to the doctor. Got those like shot, those pin pricks. You know, you get like 40 of them on your arm. It's pretty terrible. Because you're allergic to like half of them. And they find out what you're allergic to. And they found out what I was allergic to. It was good. Started getting better. Took all these shots. But this would have been about a year and a half after that time. I get this really, really strange call. That's like an automated call saying, you need to like call this number. And I'm thinking, this is a scam. Like, it just sounds like a scam. So I keep ignoring it over and over and over again. Well, finally, this number keeps, popping up over and over saying, call this. So I finally do. What it was a loan shark. And apparently what had happened was that I had an outstanding bill from the allergist that I had never paid because it had never gotten to me. They had sent it to the wrong address. It was like one digit over. I ended up finding this out later on, calling the office about it. It was an outstanding bill for years. And somehow a loan shark bought it up and started putting interest onto it. I don't know the legal reasons. I don't know any of this. I was just like very confused and very mad because the bill was nearly $700 at this point, and we did not have $700 to pay for this bill. And lo and behold, I'm not kidding, probably like a week after this, I got a letter in the mail from the family of one of my Vanderbilt RUF students. I had never met this family before. I believe they were in like Massachusetts or something. And in the letter, in this envelope, there was a little note that said, hey, spend this however you want. And there was a check. And the check was for $700, which is amazing. It was also kind of sad because it disappeared. but true story, that really happened. Now, the reason I bring it up is because you would think I was crazy if I took that envelope, I took that check, and just said, there's no way. It's so improbable. Like, this is really difficult to believe that it's the exact amount. Like, this just can't be true. And just tear it up and throw it away. Like, that would be, you would be like, why would you do it? At least check it out. At least see if it's real. At least see if money comes out of it. And it did, right? So I would just say for you, regardless of where you stand on this, I would just suggest that even if you think it's not true, lean into it. Because it's just too good to write off if it is true. It's too good to just ignore. That would be the thing. So I think for us, I'll just end on a few points of why this really matters for us. If the resurrection of Jesus is true, then that means that when it seems like God is doing nothing in your life, that actually is the point where he might be doing his greatest work. So like when Jesus died, all of his followers thought, we're done. Our leader's gone. God has failed. They thought God was backing him, right? And he died. And yet, that's actually when God was about to do his greatest work by raising him from the dead. There's a sense that God actually brings life out of death. Things have to die in order to bring life. So when it seems like nothing is going on in your life, you have like a deadness in your life, I'm just saying be prepared that God might actually be wanting to bring life into it. Like you have a dead relationship with somebody, you have like deep crippling anxiety, which we all have anxiety. But you know, you have, depression, fears, you're overloaded with school. There's maybe a habit in your life that just won't go away and it won't change. I don't know. There's just something for each of us, or many things for each of us, that just seems like it won't stop. I just want to suggest that maybe God actually wants to bring life into that. Because if Jesus rose from the dead, that means that he can. He can bring life into places you don't expect. That's one thing that it means. Another thing it means is that if he actually did rise from the dead, then you can actually have hope for the physical world. So many, many people that don't believe in this God actually care quite a bit about this material world. That's a good thing. Care about the environment, care about poverty, care about injustice, care about racism, care about war, care about disease. These are all good things to care about. Yet, what I would say is that if this God doesn't exist, then this world is an accident, and it will end. And there'll be no righting of any wrongs that are ever done on it. Ever. On the flip side, though, if this God exists, that means that when Jesus rose from the dead, God's future entered the present. Like, the way things are going to be has already started. Like, someone fully healed, someone who reversed death and decay and disease and evil and suffering, that's already happened. That's already started. The process has begun. So that means that for you and for me, that means that you can, you know, devote all your energy, all your skills, all your time, everything that you have to be able to push back against suffering and disease and evil and pain and injustice, because you know that God has already started fixing that, and he will one day fully. That's what the resurrection means. It gives you hope for the physical world because he's actually going to do something about it. He's actually going to renew it. Another thing, why this matters. I'm stealing this from Richie Sessions, another RUF pastor. If Jesus rose from the dead, the best thing that will ever happen to you has already happened. It's the best thing that you're hoping to happen for you has already happened. Christian, for the Christian in here, your identity is not in a dead teacher. It's in a living Savior. It is so easy for us to try to put our identities, me included, into our circumstances. Like, I'm good if my grades are good. I'm good if the organizations I'm in are working all right. I'm good if I had the right amount of money. I'm good if my body's working the way it needs to. I'm good if my relationships are going okay. Like, I'm just fill in the blank. You have something. Like, I'm good if this is going on. But that means your identity is always in flux. It's always going up and down. It's always moving. It's never stable. And that's actually pretty exhausting because we're always chasing something. But if he rose from the dead, that means that your identity is safe and sound and alive and well and untouchable by circumstances in him. It's stable. Like, you don't have to start chasing for it because the best thing that will happen to you already did. He already rose from the dead, and you're linked to him. So you're good. Stuff can be really bad, but it's still really good. So that's the second to last thing. Last thing. The resurrection is true. Then you just don't have to be strong all the time. You don't have to be strong all the time. Thomas did not go looking for Jesus. Jesus went looking for him. Thomas was not sought by Jesus because he, like, was particularly spiritual or faithful or believed strongly. It was the exact opposite. What Jesus is showing in this is that he actually seeks people who have a hard time believing in him, who don't have a great resume, who aren't spiritually fit, who don't think that they're strong in this regard, who aren't morally perfect. Like, those are the kind of people he reaches out to. And those are the kind of people he actually convinces of who he is. This is what grace is. It's exactly what he's showing Thomas in this. Is that he doesn't have to be strong. He can actually be weak. Because Jesus meets him there. So there are so many reasons that we can look at to say that Jesus rose from the dead. What I would say is this. Even if it's a struggle for you, if it ever becomes a struggle for you, it's too good to be true not to at least look into it. Let's pray. Father, thank you for this passage, and thank you for just meeting us in our doubts and meeting us in things that are difficult and giving us good reasons and good evidence for what you've done on this planet. We praise you that you meet us where we are, and I do pray for everybody in this room, regardless of what they think, that they would have the freedom to dig into the fact, did this really occur? Did it happen? Help us, come near to us, and bless us this week. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen.